You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Wisconsin women who are employed full-time lost a combined total of more than $8.3 billion each year, in fact, due to the wage gap, according to one report. We'll find out more.
First, 5% of Americans say they've had a near-death experience. These experiences are characterized by a host of different sensations, including feelings of serenity, security, and the presence of a light, to name a few.
Our next guest explored the science behind near-death experiences after her father had one. She's here to talk about what she found. Amy Patterell is a health journalist based in California. Amy, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with your father's story that inspired this piece. What was his near-death experience like?
Well, he had a crazy car accident and basically careened into a brick wall, and the people at the scene had to extract him from the vehicle. They were shocked he was alive, and in fact, he was barely conscious or not conscious. His blood pressure was so low. And so as he described it to me the next morning, it was like he remembered hearing voices and things, and he saw this, basically described an out-of-body experience where he felt like he saw this shadow crawling across the wall. And he just felt like he was enveloped in peace, and he couldn't explain it. It was, you know, listening to him describe it was very strange, you know, because he couldn't really explain it. But he just talked about feeling this overwhelming peace and that there was this crazy quietness, even though he had a sense of the blaring alarms and the people working on him and all of that. He was in this peaceful quiet. So that's how he described it.
And obviously he survived, but that wasn't the end of the story for him. It sounds as though what happened next was almost just as remarkable, because what happened, that near-death experience, it changed him. What happened?
Yeah, so, you know, in the months after the accident, he was going through a lot of recovery and was hospitalized for a couple of months, actually. And but after that, you know, once he got back to sort of normal life, he was writing a lot, and he was, you know, doing things that he never used to do, like sending cards, and he would send me and my sisters flowers. And this was a guy that was a mathematician. You know, he was very numbers-oriented, very logical thinker, and he was starting to write poetry, even giving us poems on Mother's Day that were really beautifully written. So it was kind of like he tapped into this whole other side of his brain after this experience. And so, yeah, it definitely changed him. It changed our entire family, for sure.
Well, and it inspired you to try to find out what science there was behind this concept of the near-death experience. What kind of scientific explanations do people give, have they found, for the sensations, the feelings that people commonly report when they report these near-death experiences?
You know, there's a lot of controversy around this area, of course, because we're delving close to God and science and how to separate the two. And I had the opportunity to speak with a few different researchers about what scientists are actually learning. This is obviously a tricky area to study, because you don't know when people are going to be close to death, especially unexpectedly. But they are looking at, you know, how the neurotransmitters change during patterns of, you know, things like transcendental meditation, when you're sort of between worlds, so to speak. And they're noticing that people have these, for lack of a better term, when the brain is starved of blood because of death or some other reason, it's still getting some sort of activity. It's kind of like the way I kind of described it is when a lizard or something gets their tail cut off, and their tail still moves even though it's not part of the lizard, you know, anymore. So it's kind of, the brain is still having these electrical signals going to it, even if it is sort of on its way toward death, if that makes sense.
And so in terms of the way it's sort of imprinted on the brain and the person afterwards, what do we know about that, about why these experiences are so vivid for people?
Yeah, it's like when your brain is in a fight or flight response, the brain sort of preferentially encodes all of the information in that time so that should the episode occur again, you would know how to survive, you would know how to save yourself. So there is a preferential encoding that scientists have discovered as they have delved into this area. But again, they don't really understand all the nuances of it and how it works.
So the idea there, the things that your brain is experiencing on this life or death experience, this moment when you're about to die and then you don't, your brain gives a top priority to that as opposed to remembering all the details of, you know, sitting and eating a pretzel or something.
Exactly, exactly. And so then years later, you still remember, it's almost like when you have a child, you remember the birth of your child much more clearly than you might, you know, a vacation you had to camp somewhere. You know what I mean? Those really high emotion moments are preferentially encoded as well.
But I guess part of the bigger question remaining is how does the brain manage to catalog all this when, you know, ostensibly it's dying?
Yeah, and that's what science obviously hasn't been able to explain, and I don't know, you know, how much you will be able to explain. Because there's an element of faith, I think, that comes in here, even for the researchers that I talk to. They can't explain it, for lack of a better term, except to say that, you know, it's a highly charged experience. So even though the electrical activity to the brain is slowing or it's theoretically being cut off, it still encodes. And, it's one of those things that I can't really explain.
Talking to Amy Patterell, a health journalist based in California, about the idea of the near-death experience and how researchers are trying to understand what people report when they survive a close brush with death and a near loss of brain function. You mentioned, Amy, that your father changed his personality in some ways, changed, or his priorities from math in some ways to poetry and feelings. Is that a common thing that people report, that they feel and act like, in some ways, different people after this experience?
Absolutely. There's actually quite a bit of research to support that portion of this whole bigger story. And Dr. Nelson has done a lot of work in this area, Dr. Kevin Nelson. So what happens is, you know, and it's to be expected, right? I mean, even people who have been threatened by cancer or who have had a tragic accident typically come back from that experience living a more full and rich life. I think with the near-death experience element added to it, what happens is people feel like they've touched something bigger than this universe or this earth or this life. And so that kind of colors the rest of their life and how they choose to lead it. Growing up, Flatliners was a favorite movie for me, and that's one of the things that they explore in that movie as well. It's sort of like when you're that close to death and you see your life might be cut off, you might choose to live it a little differently if you make it back. And so I think that happened to my dad, and I know it happens, you know, at least the research reports that it happens quite frequently. People report that they have become more tolerant of others. They've gained a greater appreciation of nature. They're more interested in the spiritual realm of things. Those are the types of things that people report.
Sounds like your father was very rational. He was a scientist, a mathematician. And we just talked about how science thinks they have some big explanation, some pieces of the puzzle about why brains and people respond to near-death experiences this way. But when you take your father's case, does he buy that explanation, or has he decided that it's changed him and maybe he believes in something different now?
You know, he definitely, I think, believes that there's more to this world. I mean, he reported saying that, you know, a voice told him he was not going to die today. And he definitely felt what he perceived as God. And I think that's a common thing that you hear people describe when they have a near-death experience, whatever their religion. They just feel this sense of peace or this world bigger than the one that they're in right now. And so I think he was not afraid. He told me he was not afraid to die. It wasn't about that, but that just this was not his time. And he came back from it just really being more appreciative of everything in this life and really soaking it up, for lack of a better term.
Seems like this has got to be hard to do science on. A, these cases are kind of rare. B, you obviously can't experiment in any sort of remotely ethical fashion with near-death experiences. How do the scientists you talk to feel about how much data they can ever really have to figure this out?
Yeah, and I think the scientists that are exploring this have accepted to a certain degree that they're not going to figure it out necessarily, and maybe they're not meant to. But Dr. Stephen Lorys, who is actually in Europe, he is one of the people that is at the forefront of really kind of trying to understand what's going on in the brain during those moments between life and death. And in fact, there's this whole lack of consensus in terms of diagnosing death, because when are you dead? Is it when your brain's dead, or is it when your heart stops beating or whatever? So what they're doing right now is just trying to catalog as many experiences as they can from people. I mean, Dr. Lorys was adamant, you know, I want to hear from anybody you know who's had a near-death experience, because he's trying to just better understand what their experience of it was and how it did change them after the fact. And, you know, they're studying the electrical patterns that people have when they recall a near-death experience and comparing that to the electrical patterns that they have when they're just recalling a real-life event, and sort of hoping that will give them some clues as well.
Amy, thanks a lot for being with us today.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Amy Patterl. She's a health journalist. She joined us to talk about her piece in next month's issue of Discover Magazine on the science and research around near-death experiences.
Coming up, we'll talk about the gender wage gap on this Equal Pay Day. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.